please give a warm welcome to our next speaker, Pam Chestek.
All right. I hear my mic working. So I am here on behalf of the Open Source Initiative, of which I am a board member, to talk about some changes that we just announced, or let me put it this way, draft proposed changes. That's why we're here, is to kind of discuss these changes and discuss, improve, take comments on these proposed changes to the license review process. Let's see. So just the background, the first meeting was November 2020, which was a long time ago, and we had COVID. So, you know, timelines ran long. Our last meeting was September 23rd, and these were the participants in the working group that we had set up for this, which I'm very pleased with this group of participants. I think we had a really nice array of different voices and different thoughts and different backgrounds who participated. So the announcement, it was announced, this draft proposal was announced on the OSI website. I apologize for the long URLs, which are useful to no one, but if you go to the OSI website, you should be, go to the blogs, you should be able to find it. It may still be the top one. I want to say that there also is proposal is on the Open Source Initiative's wiki page. We have a wiki page for it. It's on the wiki site. And that is where all feedback on these proposed comments should be placed. So I'm here. I'm going to take questions. We'll have plenty of time to talk about it. But in order to, you know, allow everybody to have see everybody's input and comments, we are asking that all of the comments be added to the wiki page. So if you have something here that you think is important, in addition to hearing from it here, I would also like you to take the time to put it on the wiki page so other people can react to it. And the wiki page is linked from the blog post. Again, I apologize about the links. So outside of the scope of this working group was the OSD itself. We did not discuss whether the OSD is appropriate or not, a conversation that comes up every so often. And we also didn't talk specifically about the tooling for the process. So at the moment, we use an email listserv. We have acknowledged for years that this is maybe not the best type of technology to use for this process, for the license review process. It's what we have now. The OSI has a parallel project of trying to identify a better tooling system for taking in licenses, asking for review, and giving feedback on those licenses, and eventually making a decision. So what we did here and the tooling are obviously very interrelated, because if we want changes to the process, that needs to be implemented in the tooling. So they do interact with each other, but we stayed away from tooling and just assumed that these issues could be handled and what we're going to do. So these were the questions that were proposed for the licensing for the working group to work on: reevaluating the criteria for approving licenses, reevaluating the process for considering licenses, reevaluating the current categories for licenses, and evaluating whether there should be a process for decertifying licenses. On the last one, we ended up not getting to that one, because when we got to that one, first off, we'd been taking a really long time. And in looking at this last one, we realized that there were many, many, many facts about the use of licenses that might potentially be decertified that we didn't know, and it would take a really long time to find those facts. So, for example, what are the licenses that one might consider decertifying? How are they being used? What are the knock-on effects of removing that? So, for example, is there a business out there that's marketing itself as an open source company, but we say, no, by the way, we don't consider your license open source anymore? What kind of impact is that going to have on that company? What about companies that ingest licenses based on the fact that they've been approved by the Open Source Initiative, and we say, by the way, this one's not approved? How is that going to change their software stack, so these were all things that we were completely in the dark about, so that we took that off of the table for this or for this group. I would very much like to see another working group start shortly to start working on that project, because I think it is a valid project. It just was not something that we didn't have time for. And frankly, I'm looking for someone else to lead that, because I'll still continue to work on this piece of the project. to try to get done what we're going to see. So these are sort of some bigger picture things that we came up with. One was we agreed that the OSI will not be providing information on recommendations or be providing advice on the use or adoption of the licenses. This is too facts-based. It's just like that's not these choices about use and adoption of open source licenses is very specific to every project. It's very hard to generalize in a way that is helpful to anyone. This is an industry. There are people who do this as their business, is to advise on adoption of open source licenses. So the OSI is not going to be diving into that field. What we will do in order to facilitate that is we hope to provide machine-readable tags as well as license text. So providing API access to license text is a task that is underway. We hope to provide machine-readable tags to go along with that in order to provide sort of more digestible information about these licenses. And again, I confess, you're all going to look at this and say, there's a giant leap of faith. There are a couple of giant leaps of faith here, and this is one of the giant leaps of faith, which is that we will, I'm looking to crowdsource both the identification of tags. We have a preliminary list. I don't think that, you know, that's novel to have to have identified some tags. But to identify the tags, and also, I mean, there are more than 100 licenses, so we need bodies to go through these licenses to be able to identify what tags are appropriate for the licenses. So something like a tag might be has a choice of venue provision, a tag might be copyleft, a tag might be attribution requirement. I mean, a couple licenses don't have that, so they would be lacking those tags. But that, you know, to help with, you know, these licenses are all unique. So in some sense, I know that I always go back and read the license every single time. But certainly providing some sort of base level information will be helpful. We plan to have three categories of licenses: rejected, approved, and preferred. The word choices are up for discussion. The preferred is sort of the substitute for what is now called, and someone can help me, popular something, a very interesting label. But we're hoping that the preferred tag will be objectively created from data, hoping to find data on adoption metrics, as well as using these tags as a filtering mechanism. So you know, a license may have an attribute and still be an open source license, but it may not be sort of a preferred attribute for a license. So that, you know, and that's again sort of up for discussion on what are those tags that would. So it would be some combination of widespread adoption and a guaranteed level of sort of what the requirements are. And we also will hope to provide more information to the public on the decision-making process. It is a little bit of a mystery, particularly for people who haven't been on license review, sort of who gets a say, how it works. We'll try to make that clearer to people. So those are larger concepts. We identified two different categories of licenses. This is, again, I think not terribly new concept: legacy licenses and new licenses. A new license is, by definition, anything that's not a legacy license. And a legacy license is one we have just sort of pinned as one that has been in use for at least 5 years by more than 20 projects maintained by different unrelated entities. But again, up for discussion. Is 20 the right number? Is 100 the right number? I don't know, but we're welcome feedback on sort of how do we know. The point of a legacy license being this is a license that is widely in use, but the OSI has not yet passed judgment on it, on this license, so we want to capture those. So for all licenses, the submission process will, and some of these are old, you know, some of them are not, some of them exist right now. We will ask the submitter to affirmatively state that the license complies with the OSD, including specifically affirming 3, 5, 6, and 9. That's because those are the ones that trip up people. I mean, we see licenses submitted where clearly the license submitter has never read the OSD. They just want to call it open source. So again, there's just a channeling function to just sort of put people through their paces on, did you really think about this? ask what projects are already using the license, the identity of the license steward. If known, we'll try to get in touch with that person. Provide any additional information, sort of, you know, the fact that maybe Debian has accepted this license would help us, help inform our decision. Give us a unique name, and again, some proposed tags for the license. This is, because we did not go into decertifying licenses instead, one of the rationales for decertifying licenses is that we get old licenses that would not now be approved, thrown back at us and say, well, you know, this was an open source license and it had this attribute. We're just clearly stating that just because a license was approved in the past with a characteristic does not mean it will be approved again. This is for new licenses. What happened with legacy licenses, or for all licenses? In addition, for new licenses, the person submitting will describe what gap is not filled by a currently existing license, compare it and contrast to the most similar. These already exist. Describing a legal review the license has been through, but we have a new one. We have a new bullet here with the arrow, which is to provide examples of others' potential use of the license to demonstrate that it is not a license that is uniquely usable only by the license submitter. So what we're looking for is we want licenses that are going to build community. And so if you have a license that nobody will ever use, then that will be a hurdle to overcome. Recommendations for approval of the licenses. Again, I have three here that I have arrows next to that I think are new. So we want to see a reusable license, that the license can be used by any licensor without changing the terms, or that the license will achieve a different result for a different licensor. So it needs to function the same way no matter who adopts it. The license does not have terms that structurally put the licensor in a more favored position than any licensee. So again, you know, this is a very even-handed, we're trying to, you know, build community here, not give anybody an advantage. I mean, I will say, you know, some of these are designed at ferreting out companies that are trying to, you know, get that moniker of we're open source, but they really have no intention of building community. They have no intention of having their software shared. They just want to use this term as a marketing tool. So that's what we're looking for. The ambiguity must not have a material effect. This is going to be licenses that a lot of them are not written in a way that is subject to clear legal interpretation. So we want to we will take into account. It must be grammatically and syntactically clear to a speaker of the language of the license. Every possible variation must meet the OSD. We had a recent one where it was sort of like, you know, two iterations were met the OSD, but not four other iterations or four other, you know, sort of variables. The next bullet, it must be possible to comply with the license on submission. And the counterexample to this was the SSPL, where I think Bradley pointed out that even MongoDB could not comply with the license itself. It was the copyright owner and therefore didn't have to comply with the license. But it was written in such a way that there was no one on earth could comply with the license. The license must fill a gap that currently existing licenses do not fill. So that's it. In a nutshell, again, you can go to the blog post and read sort of more detail about it. Put your comments on the wiki, and I'm open for questions.
Okay. So, there...
James here. I see James' hands chat up.
Interesting topic, I guess. Obviously.
Yeah.
Hi. How often do you see projects submitting people submitting licenses that projects are already using? That seems like the cart before the horse.
How often do we see licenses being submitted? There was pretty often. So the OSI's practice has been we don't review a license unless someone submits it. So there is a huge body of legacy licenses that nobody has bothered to submit to the OSI. So, we have a little over 100 licenses. have approved a little over 100 licenses. If you look at something like the Fedora project, I think they're in 400 licenses or something like that. So a lot of licenses you might expect are not there, and submit away. Happy to have those included.
Okay, now yeah. Over here.
Yeah.
Hi, thank you for your talk. I was wondering if the working group or a related body has a part of a mandate to discourage license proliferation in general, or is it purely just about how to take the incoming licenses?
So I will respond to that sort of from my personal viewpoint. I try to be clear that this is not the OSI's view. I will say that on the blog post, we will say that license proliferation, and I have the hardest time with that word, so if I may use a different word because I can't say it. I think I'm not terribly concerned about it. I think it was very important that the OSI did put the kibosh on that many years ago. But I do believe that people are centering around licenses, and that's why we're interested in sort of these preferred licenses. But when open source first started there, everybody wanted to have their own license. But now I really think that people are cohesing around licenses and so that we're not seeing proliferation as a problem, but for, again, these sort of... the company that wants to have their own license so that they can say that they're open source. So it's not the proliferation, it's the problem. It's the how they are, why are they adopting these licenses, and we want to make sure that they're being adopted for the right reasons.
Thank you.
Yep. So two-part question. Number one, you said reusable by any licensor or reusable by any of a class of licensor?
Any of a class, yes. Understanding their special purpose licenses but yes, and looking for reusability as the key. No, it doesn't have to be all purpose for all things, reusable by the appropriate audience for that. But not just that only the person proposing the license or drafting the license is the only one who will conceivably use it.
And the second, structurally favored, is the OSI going to take any position on CLAs and the uses thereof?
I don't recall what our position has been. There are others in the room. I'm looking at others in the room who might know the answer to that. No, that's not on. We have never approved CLAs or opined on CLAs, I have not heard of anybody who thinks at the moment that is something the OSI will be doing.
Can you take the slide back to the one that showed the comment about machine-readable tags?
Let's see. This one?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll just comment that I agree that preferred sounds like it means preferred by the OSI.
Right.
As though the OSI is recommending that people should use that, as opposed to popular, which means that other people are using it.
Yeah.
I think you really should change that. But going
put it on the wiki, please.
Going back to machine-readable tags, that's a notoriously hard problem.
Yeah.
You might need a controlled vocabulary for tagging.
Yes.
Okay.
It will be a controlled vocabulary for tagging.
And you might need to make it very clear that the fact that you might need to distinguish between something, a license that has not been tagged because... with a particular tag because no one's got around to it yet, versus a license that has not been tagged because it negates the validity.
So we need a tag for tagged or not tagged.
Kind of, potentially. Or completely versus not yet fully tagged.
Yeah, we only have a couple minutes. I want to make sure James, whose hand shot up first, gets to ask his question. Okay, yeah, I know, but I just.
So quick question as... you said changes to the criteria. I'm wondering if they look to me the way you presented them as additions. Is there things that you're subtracting from the existing criteria?
Oh, that's a really. Next time I present, I will add that slide. No, it's in addition to must meet the OSD.
Okay, so what are the existing criteria?
It's on the website. There's an existing process on the OSI website right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. That's why you do this, right?
Okay, so the question I was going to ask is a variant about the no privileged entity one, because one of the ways of avoiding CLAs is to have a license that says, and this entity is empowered to change the terms of the license. often done because for a new license, you don't quite know how well it will work out, and you want an escape route if you want to go to an older license. If you keep that term and sort of... I'd have to swallow it if I were putting it close to my mouth. So the question is, would there be certain privileged terms in the license that you would look favorably on if they're designed to perform a community function, like being steward of whether the license should change? Because not doing that...
The question, as I understand it, is are there terms that the OSI will look more favorably on as sort of... You mean as getting into the preferred category or just it more favorably in the license review process?
It would basically allow an entity to change the license if something went wrong. That's what people usually use CLAs for. And people have been gravitating towards licenses that name the entity instead, which would run afoul of your preferred entity.
Yeah, so let me just clarify the sort of reusable and without change is I think that a name change would be fine. So for example, if we said the license steward is who may come out with later versions and making someone else a license steward, I think that something like that, just the name, just a hard-coded name in there would be, I think that would not be objectionable. It was just, sort of in something broader than that. Let's see.
You've got 2 minutes.
Okay.
So you said the ambiguity must not have a material effect. I'm not real clear on what that means. I suspect there's more reasoning behind that. Can you give an example or explain that more?
Yeah, I don't know if I can give an example, but materiality is a term that all lawyers feel pretty comfortable with. And the reason that we said without material effect is every license is imperfect. So every license will have ambiguity, and very often you will not know what that is until down the road when someone discovers that ambiguity. So material would be, material change would be, it like changes the effect of the license. It's some interpretation that changes the meaning of the license, so that there are two different ways that the license could be read because of this ambiguity, and that actually happens quite often. I would say every license has some kind of ambiguity. The question is whether it's so significant that it's going to create interpretation problems. And time's up. All right, thank you very much.